He swiftly estimated the distance between the roadway filled with traffic and the water 135 feet below. With smoke trailing from the center engine, the tri-motor flashed under the bridge and broke out into the open, dodging a tugboat pushing a pair of barges. Kelly instructed the children to sing. Blissfully unaware of the deadly seriousness of their plight, they broke into song. This soul man, he play one. The air controller at Kennedy Airport called over his chief. I've got a mayday from a woman in an old Ford tri-motor from that air show today. She claims she's under attack by a World War I fighter plane. The chief controller laughed. Sure, and Martians are landing at the Statue of Liberty. There must be something to it. I'm receiving police calls saying a red triplane chased an old three-motored aircraft under the Brooklyn Bridge and smoked one of its engines. The pilot of the Fokker soared over the arched cables of the bridge with only feet to spare. Then he dove ahead to pick up additional speed and made a 180-degree turn, flying head-on toward the tri-motor. Rather than wait to be shot at like a tin can on a rock, Pitt stood the tri-motor on its port wingtip and sent the aircraft on the sharpest turn possible, heading directly over Piers 11 and 13 and crossing FDR Drive and South Street at a 90-degree angle. He pulled back the control column as he saw a wide street that turned out to be the lower reach of Broadway. With only a few feet to spare, he made a sharp bank and swept up the famous thoroughfare. Suddenly, he saw the pavement below the tri-motor explode in a spray of asphalt as the red Fokker swung onto his tail and unleashed a burst of 7.62 shells. At first, Pitt thought the tri-motor had escaped unscathed, but then he felt a noticeable lack of response in the controls. "What's wrong?" asked Mary. "The last burst caught our elevators. I can't pull her into a climb." The Fokker's approach had been near perfect, but the sight of buildings rising above his wings unhinged him, and he overshot the tri-motor before his guns could do any fatal damage. The pilot pulled up in a sharp vertical climb and performed an Immelmann maneuver by entering a roll and coming out flying in the opposite direction. It was immediately apparent to Pitt that his opponent was not going to waste time with a frontal assault. He was content to come up from behind the tri-motor's big tail section.
"Can you keep him in sight?" Pitt asked Mary.
"Not when he's directly behind," she said calmly. She loosened her seatbelt so she could twist around in her seat. "I'll lean out as far as I can and watch our tail."
Pitt could see Times Square approaching ahead. He tried to pull the plane higher to rise from the city, but the elevator controls refused to respond. For the moment, all he could do was maintain a straight and level flight. The crowds of people on the sidewalks and crossing the intersection stood dumbstruck at seeing the tri-motor flying down the middle of Broadway, only 10 stories above the pavement. At 1,000 feet, the pilot of the Fokker gazed down at the tri-motor threading its way between the buildings of Broadway. He watched as a police helicopter appeared and took up the chase, flying at an altitude just above the rooftops between the Fokker and the Ford. Cool and precise, he eased the control stick forward, nosing the Fokker into a dive directly toward the helicopter. A policeman on board who had kept an eye on the red Fokker could be seen frantically shouting and pointing upward to the pilot. The helicopter swung to meet what they assumed was the onslaught, but the hand weapons carried by the crew were no match for the rapid-fire machine guns, whose bullets spat from the twin muzzles and smashed into the engine below the rotor. In 3 seconds, they transformed the helicopter from a sleek flying machine into a shredded, falling wreck that dropped onto the roof of an office building. Broadway angled left as it crossed Columbus Circle. Pitt gave the right rudder a hard kick and slewed the plane around to the right as it broke free of the long chasm of tall buildings. His left wingtip missed the 70-foot-high statue of Christopher Columbus by less than 10 feet as he banked over Central Park West and 59th Street. Thousands of people who were enjoying the park on a warm summer afternoon stopped all their activities and stared at the drama unfolding above them.
"He's coming back!"
Mary shouted. He's 800 feet above and diving on our tail.
Pitt could bank and barely turn, but he couldn't gain a foot of altitude. A plan formed in his mind, a plan that would only work if the Red Fokker made a strafing run directly over the tri-motor and then overshot. He flicked the ignition and fuel switches of the middle engine to the on position. The battered engine coughed several times, then caught and began turning over. Then he banked the tri-motor sharply to the right, knowing his insane attacker was thundering in from above. The evasive action momentarily caught the pilot off his mark, and the twin streams of fire from the Red Fokker went wide to the left. The pilot quickly compensated, and Pitt felt the bullets tearing into the upper wing of the tri-motor and ripping into the starboard engine. Flames erupted inside the nacelle behind the engine, but its cylinders still beat strongly. He twisted the old plane in the opposite direction, waiting for the right moment to go on the attack. Suddenly, a storm of bullets swept the cockpit, smashing into the instrument panel. The mad pilot was anticipating Pitt's every move. Pitt shoved all three throttles to their stops. With his center engine throwing out clouds of smoke and oil, the tri-motor leaped forward like a thoroughbred out of the chute.